You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Well, not exactly. We're going to do a little trolling on the way to where we're going to go fishing. But then when we get to the place that we're going fishing, we're not trolling anymore. We are bottom fishing. I was telling you a little earlier that one of the really good things about the latest get-together of the Western Pacific Region Fish and Management Council is we've been able to readdress something about bottom fishing that's very important. And, you know, it's always a struggle to get your point across, and there's always arguments, and it looks like we're heading in the right direction, at least somewhat in the right direction. And every now and again, we bounce this off our chief cook and bottle washers in the We Get Involved and You Don't department. And, you know, I'm kind of tired of scolding you guys all the time and letting you know that it wasn't for these two guys that are always getting embarrassed when I say this. But a lot of the things that you're concerned about would not be getting looked at or would have gone out in the wrong direction. So what we got, a couple guys who are friendly competitors when it comes time to bottom fishing. But they have a common ground and common experience in not only catching fish, but selling their fish and feeding their families and having their families feeding their families too. So Ed Watamura and Roy Morioka join us. And first of all, Roy, pretty interesting. I don't know how many hours or how many days you spent at the legislature this season, but a lot.
A lot.
So it must be somewhat of a relief, at least for the time being. The damn session is over.
Amen.
Yeah. But, you know, there are some victories. And I know that there are some things that are good and some things that are bad. And before we get Ed involved, let's talk about that one of the things that we all get concerned about is that the people that make the decision are getting their information, and they're likely to do the last thing that they heard, and it may not be the right decision. But this year, it looks like maybe little changes there.
That's right, Mike. And a lot of effort on the part of Westpac.
Yeah.
And you know, their energies that they put into the project. And, you know, you got to give it a kitty the SSC.
Yeah, and for those that don't understand that, is that there are regions throughout the country, the Western region, which we are certainly the biggest geographically, but their decisions being made in the big square building in Washington, D.C., that affect us all the time.
Amen.
Yeah, and so this time, and I also want to bring Ed Watamura in, because Ed and Roy are pals in many respects in this. Ed, talk about the amount of work that our buddy Roy over here has done, and were it not for you two guys and others, some of our conditions or our complaints or our concerns would not even be addressed.
Yeah, well, you know, Roy, he's just one of the best words I can use to describe this guy is he's tireless.
Yeah, relentless. I call him relentless.
I just, you know, I don't know how he does it. Mm. I mean, it's like most of us need certain amount of sleep at night, but somehow this guy can get away with very little sleep.
And multitasking,
he just,
huh?
He just keeps going and going, reading everything and letting the truth be known. And we love that about this guy.
My issue is, and always has been, that it you know, a lot of us in the fishing community, and of course we're scattered because we're divers, we're trollers, we're net guys, we're whipping guys, we're bottom fishing guys like you guys. We don't touch bases with each other often enough, but if it weren't for the effort that you guys have been doing with regards to this bottom fishing. So let's, first of all, gang, I want you to know a little bit more about these guys. Ed, you've been fishing in a lot of different areas of fishing, but what is your affinity or your love of bottom fishing?
Well, you know, in the summertime, we love to go chase ahi.
Of course.
And, you know, the excitement, I mean, you're just riding around, and then that outrigger pops and that reel starts screaming. That feeling is the thing. It's addicting, you know. And
By the way, it just so happens that we're taping the program, and many of you that are listening on your boat because the ahi shootout is right now. So what you went out this morning, we had pre-recorded the show. Otherwise, we could tell you the winners, which we'll do next week. But at last look, and you're right, Ed, at last look, there was close to the limit, close to the 140 boats went out fishing today.
Yeah, that's
waiting awesome. For that scream you're talking about.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
And the bragging rights attached to it. Right. But then there's other things. I mean, you know, sometimes we know, like the longline boats, they fish for this or they fish for that. They got to do major gear changes. But it looks like for bottom fishing, you just stop. You put, bring in your lines and you do the bottom fishing part.
Well, not really.
I want people to understand what a bottom fisherman is. And it's no easy thing to go out there,
no,
especially when you have to, and go catch some fish.
It is not easy. Yeah. It is. We like to think of it almost as an art, as an art form. I mean, it's so involved, and there's so many facets and so much to learn about bottom fishing. It's endless. Yeah. I mean, once you think you know a lot, you find out you don't know squat.
That's a great one. We ought to make a T-shirt on that, Roy. You think you know a lot, you don't know squat. You know?
Yeah, it's just like playing golf, right, Mike?
But I got to tell you something. A lot of you all know that listen to the program. Quite often, and again next week, we have the guys from Wicked Tuna on. And some of these guys, they get on their marks or their numbers, and there's two boats on the same place, and one guy catches two eye, and bluefin, and one guy catches nothing. So it's no guarantee. Even if you know where the fish are, there's no guarantee you're going to catch them.
Amen.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of people that are listening that don't really understand what ground fish or bottom fish are. Here in the main Hawaiian Islands, we're really only fishing for what, seven species?
Seven species, And they call it deep seven.
Mm-hmm.
Ehu, onaga, opakapaka, lehi.
Yeah.
Hapapu, which is kind of an anomaly, is a grouper. Karikari and Gindai.
Yeah, so that's it. Now, you're not likely to find all of these fish in one place, are you?
No.
And that's because of what?
They have different habitats.
And are they depth related or
very much
bottom
so.
Related,
Structure and depth related.
So you pretty much know if you are a paka guy or you are a... and I want to use this thing because I went out fishing with my friend Art Kamasugi a couple of weeks back, and we caught some uku in shallow water.
Very shallow.
Yeah. But that's because we didn't want to be in deeper water because the water was kind of rough. That's another thing, though. So people don't understand it. When you put your hook in the water, when we do these things we call effort and all of that stuff, that the species, you already pretty much know what you're going to catch.
Yeah. You know what you're targeting. Mm-hmm. So that's why you're there.
Yeah. Okay, so that means, and Ed, we were talking about something off the air. There are a lot of people that don't understand what a fishing trip is. And so maybe some of the statistics and some of the numbers that have been used before kind of skewed things bad because it made it look like you're fishing for a lot longer than you really are. Why is that? How does that work?
Well, what they're after is fishing time, so your lines in the water time.
Okay, in other words... For bottom fishing, you're
talking
bottom soak
fishing,
time.
Correct.
How long your hook's in the water.
Correct. And there's a lot of time in transit, going to and from where you're going to fish at. And then once you get there, there's a lot of search time involved.
Yeah.
So, and you see what looks like a pile of fish under there, and you drop, and they're not biting for some reason or another. So you go off, and you go searching for another place. And that search time is a lot.
So if you worked it out to how much you're making an hour on these fish, it's not a lot.
No.
Yeah. But the thing is, and Roy, I think we talked about this once a long time ago. Some of us, like my guys, when we're going to go try someplace else, we troll to the other place. Some guys don't. They bring up their lines and they charge to the other place because they know that this, between here and a mile from here, forget about it. We just want to get over there.
That's right, Mike. And the more... inventory of spots that you have, gives you that opportunity to zip from point to point. Every time you have to break down, set up a different, gear type, it takes time. So most of us, if we're bottom fishing, unless it's a real long haul to the next spot, we just take off and go.
There is one thing that came up a couple of weeks ago, and I promised the audience, and I'll ask you both this. When you say that you have a lot of numbers, the longer you've been doing this, the more favorite spots that you have. And some of these spots, which were closed off, may have been inadvertently closed off or shouldn't have been closed off. So is there now a possibility that some of the recent decisions have been made, some of the places where you used to fish and can't anymore, you will be able to revisit?
Well, we're waiting to see.
Mm-hmm.
The scuttlebutt that we've heard is that they're willing to open half or six of them.
And when you say them, you're talking about...
The LNR.
Yeah. No, I don't mean the authority. I mean these places that you're talking about. Why What are they designated as?
Oh, they're BRFA's bottom fishing restricted areas.
And from what I understand, some of the BRFA's, if not all of them, have been pretty much honey holes for a long time in the past.
Well, that's why they were picked.
Yeah, of course. Duh. Yeah.
You know, when they were established, you know, they spoke to a bunch of highliners, mm-hmm. bottom fishermen that really know what they're doing, catch a lot of fish, and they pretty much got information from them mm-hmm. as to where the abundance and the larger fish existed.
This is an important point, because those of you that really know what you're doing, if you drop your lines in the water and the fish you bring up are small, you might just, you know what, this hole is not ready. You know, let's go over there. There's some people that are greedy. They're going to take those fish.
Correct.
And they're the ones in the past. But when you talk about people, I think the audience ought to know. And if you guys are just joining us, Ed Watamura and Roy Morioka are bottom fishing brothers. And they are with HVAC. They're with Wailua Boat Club. They're with a lot of different organizations that do this. And it appears to me, Roy, that there just aren't many of the sensei or the ninjas coming up like there used to be. A lot of what you guys are doing right now and sort of comfortably aging in place, there's nobody with the expertise that's replacing you unless we are able to go fishing.
That's right. And finding crew is one of the most difficult things. Yeah. And as Ed indicated earlier, you know, bottom fishing, you got to set up your gear, yeah. you got to cut bait, you got to cut palo. I mean, there's so many moving parts mm-hmm. to the fishery that most guys that jump on the boat and go with you don't realize.
They have no clue.
Yeah, they have no clue. But if they have the passion like Reno Young to really observe what is going on, how you're doing it, and it becomes a science, right? Yeah. Just like trolling.
Well, here's the thing. We spent a little time earlier in the year talking about the increases in the costs and the licensing and everything else. And what you brought up was very important, and I hope that it got the legs that it needed. And that is, it's better off having a boat pay a fee, even if it's a larger fee. And that way, that if I'm going to fish with you once or twice a year, I don't need a license. I'm fishing on a licensed boat. I'm one of a crew that fishes on my boat. How is that? Where did that go?
That is such an archaic rule. Mm-hmm. The crew doesn't sell a fish.
Yeah.
You know, it's the boat owner or the captain that's going to
And they may or may not be part Amen. Of the financial. They might be just coming out to help you up, and all they want is a fish to take home with them.
It might be your kid, you know, exactly. joining you just to go out fishing, or your relative that's visiting from the mainland.
Or the pesky neighbor that finally says, when are you going to take me fishing, right?
Amen.
Yeah. Oh, boy. But see, it's the same thing. And I also want to make sure that the audience doesn't think that there's an overabundance of bottom guys. Every time you see the BF, you know, decals on a boat, that doesn't mean that's an accomplished, regular, productive bottom fisherman, does it?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I think the numbers will indicate that. I think there's, 10% of the bottom fishermen catch 80% of the fish.
Yeah, and so that means that we have a lot to learn from those folks and a lot of people to thank, because I do know another thing, Roy, that there are a lot of people that absolutely count on that production. And, you know, if by closing out those areas, all of a sudden people are bringing in fish from other places that didn't compare in quality or even health to the fish that we catch.
That's right. And that's what's, you know, dumbfounding to the bottom fishermen, because, you know, those fish that are in the BRFA, mm-hmm. they're not even included in the stock assessment. So now when you scratch your head and you say, okay, you closed off 20% of the fishing areas, then you think, okay, those are the most productive areas.
Right.
Now, if the fishery is solid without those areas,
right.
why close them?
Exactly.
You know?
That's always baffled me. I even had feedback from the audience at different times. They didn't understand that. But I think what they also don't understand is that the intentions are good. Everybody knows that we have to conserve this and conserve that. But from what you say and others have said, that the stock, if anything, was highly underrepresented. In other words, some guy says, hey, you know what? I used to fish there all the time, but there's no fish there anymore. And you always say, wait a minute. How do you know that? Were you there last week or next week? You know, it's not the same. It's fluid.
That's right. Yeah. And fish have tails, right? Water temperature, mm-hmm. wind conditions, currents, all of these things play in the grand scheme of things. So when you close areas, you're denying access to the resource. Now, if we're fishing, let's basically the science is maximum sustainable yield. That's the federal law.
Exactly.
You fish. And
take
the feds
exactly
say,
what you can.
Right.
But with this bottom provision, we have to stop at that point because.
Correct. Yeah. So now maximum sustainable yield is 50% of the stock you can fish.
Mm-hmm.
That 50% is now subject to the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you set aside 50% already. And now you're establishing rules to say, okay, what are the parameters that you want to be fishing?
Yeah, in other words, size, you know, season, all of the kind of stuff.
Species.
Yeah.
So the federal rule is you come up with an annual catch limit.
Mm-hmm. ACL, they're
ACL.
Called. Yep.
And there's acceptable biological catch, and there's all many moving parts to the science of this whole. So basically what determines what can be fished is a stock assessment, and that is a peer-reviewed effort.
You know? This is very important when you say peer-reviewed. Ed, we were talking about this off, you know, before we started to record the show today, and that is the importance of having the fisherman part of the peer-review group, because you can take a scientist, and he's only as good as his stats go in his computer, and you can take a legislator who's relying on the scientist, and all of a sudden a rule gets made, and the fisherman says, hey, what happened? Why didn't they listen to what we had to say? Has this improved, in your opinion?
Well, what happened, the group that does the peer review, it's a CIE, Center of Independent Experts.
Okay.
And they're actually worldwide. It's a, some of these reviewers came from European countries and New Zealand and all over the world.
It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for that. You know?
Yeah. So these guys really know their stuff. Mm-hmm. And for them to say yay or nay, it's a lot goes into that.
Are you saying, and Roy, that they demand a certain amount of information before they're willing to come up with an opinion?
Very definitely. Yeah, they scrutinize the data.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, they understand the model. You know, there's a model, a mathematical model that determines what that allowable catch is going to be.
And that might be a formula based on how much of this is travel time. Most of the boats come out of Hawaii Kai and they're going to Lanai. Or, you know, where are all of these people doing this?
That's right. So the catch per unit of effort is just one element. Mm-hmm. The other element is the reproduction. Mm-hmm. What is the reproductive capacity of each of these species, the seven species? Yeah. So they do that. They do age and growth studies.
Yeah, they get in their earrings and they...
Exactly. You know, the otolith?
Yeah, yeah.
They're counting how old these fish are. And they're looking at when these fish mature to spawn and all of that. So we kept raising our hands saying, you know, you got to consider all of these other things that are not only those elements, but what determines a trip?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long are you fishing?
You know, weather. I was just shocked that wasn't looked into from day one, but it wasn't, was it?
It wasn't. Yeah. And it's because it was assumed that because the average at a certain point in time was 1,500 pounds, that was a trip. Mm-hmm. And we kept raising our hands and saying, that's not a trip.
Yeah.
You know, that was over several days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we kept pounding at it, but we weren't heard. So when the Center of Independent Experts reviewed the data, they raised the same question. What is this trip?
You know,
and how is this fishery conducted? And
On top of that, I've come to find out about different technology and different things that we used to actually look. And a combination of looking with a better piece of equipment than they used to have, and the information, the anecdotal information from the fishermen, then this peer group would have probably been made it more comfortable. So what I wanted to find out is what some of these recommendations are that they've done is, and when there's going to be some action on them with regards to lifting, like Ed, we're talking of the BRFAs, lifting some of those things and letting us go out and catch the fish we need to catch. So where does it set right now?
Well, I think that as far as we know, the BRFA issue is within DLNR right now. And I think they're coming up with,
which is rules making rather than laws, right? The DLNR can enact these things. That's their job.
Yeah.
That's their job.
They go through the Chapter 91 process,
and
which includes going out to the public and seeing what the public thinks about all of it. But
that's where you all come in. When we start telling you to go to one of these meetings, for heaven's sakes, go to the meeting.
That's right. Yeah. And believe it or not, Mike, there was a meeting, such a meeting. And 61% of the population said, get rid of them.
You're right. Yeah, we must make sure that people understand that these people are not greed-motivated. Nobody's driving Mercedes on this. It's a lifestyle, and it's what we want to eat. I think that's important, because if somebody says, hey, tell me that there's rules, but I got hungry kids, and I got to feed them. If that mempachi is 3 inches, I'm sorry, I'm going to take it. But there are people that have more responsibility, and there are not that many bottom fishermen around anymore. Like Ed was saying, the greatest percentage, I mean, the smallest percentage is catching all the fish.
That's right. So if you figure, there's 350 guys that are reporting as commercial fishermen.
I didn't know that. 350.
350.
Now, in the whole state.
And 10% are catching 80% of the fish.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's 30 guys.
Yeah. From what I understand,
those guys are full-timers.
From what I understand is some of those guys that you mentioned, they have the expertise, but they don't have the financial motivation. Maybe they got a good paying job, but they don't want to waste money on their boat. So what they want to do is just catch enough fish to take care of the neighbors, taking care of the boat payments. They're not trying to make a retirement out of it.
Amen.
Yeah. And there's a lot of those.
A lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, but I still want to talk about this peer review. So those of you that don't understand this, what happens is the council, like other groups, reaches out into the community, gets advisory guys and people like Ed and Roy together. I've been asked to do a couple of things, and I know a lot of other people in different phases of the community. And we wouldn't be given of our time unless there wasn't a predictability of somebody really paying attention to what we come up with and acting on it. So my question for you both today is, this current scenario that we're looking for, is there hope? I mean, is there a way that this peer group is going to say, you know what, now we think we might have the right remains, let's try what these guys want. Let's open up half of these, or let's do something.
Opening up half of them is not the answer.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't want to be greedy. Vibrant, said, okay, open them all up. What are we waiting for? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why keep them closed?
Yeah.
Now, get this. The state buys into the federal management policy, mm-hmm. right? Annual catch limit.
Right.
All fishery stops when you reach that limit. And yet they have this other piece over here that denies access to the resource.
Yeah, where the possible limit is. Okay, now we've seen this work or not work in the sword fishery. Okay, when interaction with turtles, the season's over. Okay, we've also seen that there are certain places within the Pacific where your catch is regulated. The area, I'm talking about big eye or about tuna, but so that would mean that the same sort of rules should apply to these fish, as long as it is predictable that the fishery is sustaining.
That's right, yeah. And if there was no science. Mm-hmm. Then it's a guessing game. Yeah. But there is solid science, and the science is in being improved every day, you know. And the stock assessment is getting better and better because we were part of the process.
Yeah.
And the science, they're letting us test that science.
Yeah, see, that's what I think is important. Now, this always comes up. A couple of guys that knew that I was going to be a talking story with you guys. First, I'm going to ask Ed and then Roy. There are a lot of people that are saying that some of these fish we're talking about, some of this very valuable deep seven fish, can they be raised, can they be farmed? Can they be raised? Can we kapu areas and raise a certain species there? I know that it's a dream for a lot of people, but is it realistic?
There was an attempt to do Opakapaka mm-hmm. in Coconut Island, Kaneohe Bay. And one of the reasons that it was good to do it there is that it's known as a juvenile area.
Yeah, like
that you can catch a lot of little guys.
Or something, right? Yeah, okay.
But I think the problem, like it always is with aquaculturing wild fish, mm-hmm. is the food.
What they eat
What they eat.
And if they're not foraging on their own, if they're eating pellets,
exactly,
the meat may not be the same, right?
Well, they may not survive without eating the proper mm-hmm. food and getting the right nutrients. And it's such a complex situation of getting that right food mm-hmm. that oftentimes it doesn't succeed. So.
Yeah, and you know, I know that it's a great pie in the sky, and someday somewhere, there's going to be a, they may not be the species that we're eating and liking now, but there's going to be protein, swimming protein developed, you know, on a bigger scale. But that's, for me, that's kind of scary, especially if it ends up, let me go back a little bit. Everybody remembers what happened when they brought in the ta'ape to Hawaii. Sounded good. Look good on paper. It's a disaster. Only because we're only now just freeing out to really we should be eating things, yeah. Right? How often does that happen when you guys are out bottom fishing, when you all of a sudden you run into these big ta'ape, and are they eating what you're trying to catch?
They got to be eating what we're trying to catch. Yeah. I mean, you know.
We're not going to, it's good, not going to be the deep eight because these fish are in it, right? Yeah.
But, you know, they're competitors, right?
Yeah.
And then they got to survive. And if they're really aggressive like the ta'ape, they're going to survive.
And they're getting big.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when they were little 4 or 5 inches. Now they're huge.
Yeah. Now they're pound and a half, 2 pounds. Yeah. Ta'ape's. Yeah.
So that's what I'm getting at. And so this would, I would imagine, going into the future, that everybody's going to think twice about inviting any new species to come in because we just don't know how it's going to upset the apple cart.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, we were part of a group and we went to Coconut Island and they were telling us about some biological DNA studies.
Mm-hmm.
They found exact DNA ta'ape that exists in the main Hawaiian islands. They found it in the furthest reaches of the northwest Hawaiian islands. Mm-hmm. That's far. I mean, that's like the west coast. West coast of
a couple of thousand
United
miles.
States.
Yeah.
So the fact that these ta'ape, that same DNA ta'ape could exist and were that potent, that strong, to be found at the furthest reaches of the northwest Hawaiian Islands tells you how incredible that fish is. That thing will survive anything.
It's kind of scary because they survive, Roy, at what expense? I mean, you know, the strong, the weak get eaten by the strong, right?
That's
and
right.
I don't want ta'ape to eat my opakapaka or whatever, you know.
True.
Yeah.
And you know, those are the dangers of such transplants. Yeah. You know.
I think we've learned a little bit on that. I'm not sure that we'd be jumping into that without some sort of studies going forward. But I think that what I want the audience to have as a takeaway here is the meetings that that we're talking about have been going on and are continue to go on, and we're going to report next week on what happened at the council meeting that's going on Maui as we record this. And so that's another thing to look forward to. But I sort of think that, you know, you mentioned before, Roy, that there were some meetings, and I know there are going to be some more. What's coming up? What can be done to educate people that are listening a little bit more about the right thing to do with regards to our Deep Seven?
Basically, if you go to the council's website,
WPCouncil.org, my friends.
WPCouncil.org. You're going to see a lot of papers on bottom fish, and that's probably the best place to go to get a grounding, of what the fishery is and what it's all about. The other one is to attend those fishers forums that UMC.
I've learned we've met such an eclectic group of people over the years as this has increased. It is like the pebble in the pond, but it's like I was saying when we went to a meeting critiquing a couple of fishers forums ago. The pebble in the pond, we got to use a bigger rock. We got to throw a big pebble in the pond so that the word gets out quick enough because, you know, to come to get together with people that you normally don't have a chance to rub elbows with, look at you bottom guys get to meet trolling guys and the trolling guys meet the limu guys and everybody meets everybody.
Yeah, and we all benefit, right? Yeah,
exactly. So that means, friends, not only to come to these get-togethers, but if you go to WPCouncil.org, what you're going to find out is, I don't want to say it totally unbiased, but Roy mentioned off the air, let's repeat this. It is so pleasant to realize that the efforts, especially of the Western Regional Management, have included so many of us in the bottoms-up sort of thing. So that now, when this peer group, and the takeaway here is, do you think the peer group's getting better armed to make a decision, right, as we speak?
I think so. And the peer review groups, being, you know, totally divorced from us, that gives that unbiased,
the arm's length kind of agreement,
unadulterated, you know, analysis.
Because otherwise, one would expect, oh, juice. If you're talking about nine bottom fishermen, all they want to do is catch the bottom fish. But I also think that maybe there should be a way, and I don't know how to do this. And because of your affiliation, I should say, with your club, Ed, There are a lot of guys that probably don't bottom fish as much as others think they do, and maybe we got to get clearer on what divisions there are within this group of bottom fishers, that they're not all, like you said, a handful of supplying the commercial market. They're not commercial at all.
Oh, that's very true. In fact, in our club, the bottom fish is fishing is such a difficult thing that not a lot of members in our boat club even attempt to do it. No. We try to spread the knowledge, so we try to take some of these guys out with us, and hopefully they'll catch the bug and.
But you got to eat. You got to eat right. You got to drink right. You got to be careful because you get out on that boat. It may not be like sitting on your lanai, right?
Oh yeah.
But you know, but you know, here's the thing. Let's just talk about a minute, Roy, about the joys of it, because I know that no matter how jaded you are, no matter how busy you get, no matter how many humbug meetings there are, when you finally get in the water and you put that hook in the water and you think, okay, I was last here, October the 15th, 1998, and here I am again. Oop, I got a bite. That's got to be the great leveler.
Tell me, and you know, just being on the water, and you know, it's a mind game, as you know, right, Mike? You're challenging the fish,
of course,
and you're trying to figure out what it's going to do get you, when, buddy. Right?
You don't like this color? Okay, wait, I'm going to change baits.
Exactly.
On me right now.
Exactly, and you don't like this food I'm giving you? I'm going to try and change something else. Mm-hmm. But really. It's that kind of inner excitement, if you will, that when you see that pole shake or you feel that jerk on your line, then you go, oh, you know.
Especially to me, if when somebody's on the boat that's not feeling so well and you finally say, okay, now we got him. All of a sudden, the guy that felt pretty bad, now he's happy.
Adrenaline rush.
But there's still another thing, and that is not just in the joy of it, but in the actual marketability of it. I mean, it's such a thrill to do that. And I guess, you know, I don't want to, you know, tell any secrets or anything because I know that's not going to happen. But, you know, Roy mentioned earlier about bait and about palu. And it seems like the bait of choice really varies. Can you sometimes bait for one species and another species will ignore the bait?
Well, each species has preferred bait. Mm-hmm. And we try to optimally
match it.
So, and that's a game too, because a lot of times that bait is not available. Mm-hmm. So then you got to go look for something else to use, you know. Yeah. And you got to be creative about just catching the bait or buying the bait. You know, I mean, it's
well, you know, really we often liken it when we talk to the guys, the long range guys, like out of San Diego. They go by the bait station. They buy scoops.
Yep.
I mean, it's like so easy. And we don't have scoops.
No.
Yeah, we get our own stuff.
Would be nice.
Yeah. But I think the interesting thing is, and I hope the takeaway, folks, is that what sounds like a few doing a lot is true. That's what's happening with these guys. They're way too modest to say that on their own. But I don't know what I'd do without Ed and Roy from time to time, because you guys and gals ask me questions that I have no clue of answering. I'm guessing, and one of the biggest complaints on how I want to finish with both you guys, is a lot of people that don't understand what you do are saying, you know what, it's unfair now. You guys got all of this electronic equipment, you got the GPSs, you got all of the things that you need, you got the fish finders, so you're taking more fish.
Go ahead.
Wow, what a loaded statement.
You see, I waited to. You're taking all the fish because you, but yet I know guys that have all of those things, and Brother Papa is out there with none of those things, and he's catching five times the fish.
Oh, well,
so it's not a guarantee.
For sure.
That's
why I said before, it's an art.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys that are really, really good at it, they're almost like, you know, like Zen masters.
They climb up all the way up the mountain just to get an answer from the guy, right?
They can somehow visualize and know what's happening, you know, down deep in the water, and a lot of us just don't have a clue like they do, you know.
Who was your mentor?
Actually, it started with Ed Ebisui, and Kurt Kawamoto,
okay,
and then Leonard Yamada, who's an awesome opaka fisherman. I went on his boat, and he's helped me a lot, and also Roy, right? Sitting next to me, he's really brought me along. I wanted to tell you a quick story. One day, I went on Roy's boat, and we were out on the banks, and we were fishing, and nothing was happening. We kept going to different spots. Yeah. Could see the fish down there, you know, on the recorder. Nothing.
What's the matter with you guys?
Yeah. And finally, we go to a place, and we took a while to drive there, and we tried, and we started catching good size of pakapaka right on a slope.
Which is exactly what Roy's wants.
And Roy goes, "Wow, this is amazing," said. "I haven't been here since the 1960s.
The ocean is that big, by the way.
Amen.
And I want to tell you another thing. The best of the fishermen have a lot of places to go. They don't rely on any one place every time, do they?
No,
yeah,
they don't.
Can't do that. Well, listen, I want to tell you, it's always a pleasure to hook it up with you guys. And that's the other thing. I never get them to tell secrets because that's not going to happen. But if you want to learn, if you see, I think that one of the neat things about it is just that there's so few of the actual hardcore career bottom fishing guys, because it's too hard, you know. And like you said, it's hard to find a crew. Who was your mentor?
My mentor basically started way back when Ken Fukuhara and shucks, I'm trying to draw a blank now, but those two guys, you know, I was a greenie, so those days you don't have any electronics, right? So you drive to the banks, 2 hours. Says, "Okay, right, throw the line."
Yeah, or the guy that used to say, "Okay, wait. See the tree on top of Cocoa Head? Wait, you got to line that up with the boulder." Then,
even tell you that. Yeah, okay. We just have Elio and Lau lights, and we're going. Yeah. So we go for 2 hours, and he says, "Okay, right, throw the line." So you got, 500 yards of line in the basket. The whole thing goes out. He goes, "Not here. Pull them up." So you pull it up, and you're the stucky, right? You're the greenie. Yeah. So they go another 15 minutes. Okay, right, throw the line.
Yeah.
So that's how you learn, right? And basically, that's how I learned.
Yeah.
And then along came the recorders, the old Furuno brush recorders, and along came GPS. But, if you look at the landings over time, even with all the better electronics and everything else, it remains
same,
constant.
Yeah. And that's mainly because a lot of the fishermen that used to fish aren't fishing. So, it balances itself out. So it's not easy to just go out and buy this stuff and become a bottom fisherman. You find that out real quick. You can spend a lot. You can bust out another 1,000 on your boat every day and still not catch the fish.
And species misidentification, I'll tell you.
Okay, so that's going to wrap it up. We certainly want to thank Ed Wanamura and Roy Morarica for joining us today. And thank you for listening. If you want to hear something on the program, you know what to do. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. themikebuckshow@gmail.com. And all of this stuff that we've been talking about, a wonderful source for you and for your family right now is wpcouncil.org. wpcouncil.org. Have a great day. We'll see you next time on Go Fish.